I'm June Nelson. I'm the Lutheran campus pastor at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And we're spending a little time this evening to look at the topic, the ordination of women. Now, I'm assuming that you came here tonight because you had an interest in this. You either have questions or maybe you have a particular area you want to focus on, and so rather than waste your time, I'd like us to just kind of get some of that up on the board. What is some of your interest in this topic? What are you really concerned about, or what do you want to deal with?
I don't know if you can put a gauge on the acceptance of congregations.
Right.
Critique it and maybe send back some info.
The acceptance of congregations. Now, you're talking about the call process?
No, I mean the ones that when they have a
woman. Once they have been called,
yes,
and they
are. Get any feedback from.
And once they're in the pastoral capacity,
right.
Okay.
How they change attitudes maybe from what?
Well, there's a lot up here, isn't there? Let's start with number one, and maybe some of you sitting here can be a resource. Do any of you have a woman pastor? Have any of you been part of a call committee that has interviewed a woman candidate? You have. Can you share a little?
She turned us down, so there really isn't much of a story.
Well, all right, but let's hear what you got to share about that.
First was, we were looking at, I suppose, so many congregations do when there's a two-pastor situation, for a quote-unquote youth pastor, and she was not interested in that aspect, or at least not focusing in on that aspect of the ministry. So I shouldn't say that she turned us down, but her, you know, the call was never extended. I think that was the strongest feeling there.
There's not much interest in the.
Okay. This, by the way, is something I think women in ministry face all the time, and that's the problem of the stereotypical role. The automatic assumption that women are nurturers, or that women would want to work with the kids in education, or that women, of course, would be interested in doing youth ministry. They may and they may not. I mean, because they are female does not automatically mean that they would want to put their major emphasis. Some women are excellent administrators. Some women are excellent community organizers. Some of them are superb theologians. And they really hate doing confirmation class. Or doing the high school retreat thing, or working with the little kiddies in the nursery. And so then sometimes there are expectations, you see, that women pastors will do the nurturing education stuff, and you run into that kind of difficulty. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I was going to say that. By the way, we are one of those congregations who had a stereotype as what the associate pastor ought to do. And actually, we followed those manual, but we still had those same expectations, and it didn't work out altogether too great in some respect, because we stereotypically think that the associate pastor will be younger, will have an interest in youth ministry and education and evangelism.
Right.
And that's not necessarily where it comes out at all, but that's.
Yeah.
That's our stereotype.
Yeah. Well, this is a comment I have gotten from some women in ministry. And it does affect, I think, the acceptance situation once a woman does get in a pastoral position. There are pitfalls. And these are pitfalls that. And some of you, were any of you here last week when we talked about this, or are you all new? Because I'll probably repeat myself, huh? You'll just have to put up with it. Some of the pitfalls that come in the congregational relationships are still, although in the LCA, for example, we have been ordaining women since 1970, when the National LCA Convention was in Minneapolis. And there were already women who had theological education that were waiting in the wings, that had their proper credentials and their seminary training. But the church had simply not approved the next step, and that was their ordination, and they had to get a call. But because, especially for those of us who were in the first wave, there is this feeling of being the first, or different, or unusual. And that can work in a couple of ways. And I think women in ministry have to be very in touch with that. I was the first woman to be ordained in Ohio. And frankly, I think I was the right woman to be the first. I mean, honestly, because I had my three kids, I'd been around the church, I was older. I was fairly centered in terms of my identity, fairly realistic about, I thought. But what it did was it attracted a lot of public attention. A lot of media, television, newspaper interviews, a large attendance at the ordination. It was real whoopee. It was really a whoopee. Great night. But that poor bishop, he'll never be the same again.
Where was it held?
In Springfield, Ohio, in the church where I did my internship. But I'm saying that I think this is a real thing that women in ministry have to be very in touch with. The fact that in a lot of areas still within the church, they're a novelty. And there's pressure with that. There's some kind of pressure because you feel that you should perform, or that you really have to, prove out. You got something to prove. And and now I am so accustomed. I have preached in so many pulpits and gone out and supplied in so many congregations since I've been at the university that I have actually, and I have to remind myself of this, that there still are congregations where it is first time they've had a woman in the pulpit. And for me, it's old hat. I mean, I don't even think about it anymore. My biggest anxiety is finding the church. Once I get there, I'm swell. But that's what really gets me unnerved, trying to find out where all these places are. But so there is newness still. And even though more and more women are coming out of our seminaries, this is still not, for many people, a familiar image. And there is a growth process, both on the part of the woman pastor and the congregation that offers the call. The other temptation is, especially if you have a young, very attractive, vivacious, bright, single woman pastor, for some of the older gentlemen, for example, to be very paternalistic, very condescending, and very, almost as though she's the daughter instead of the pastor. This kind of a paternal attitude that a lot of young women resent, frankly. Some overlay here of the whole sexual implication involved. For 2,000 years, you've had a male fraternity, and you've had a church that is dominantly, on Sunday mornings, predominantly women. And here is the pastor up in the chancel, either functioning as a father figure or a surrogate for a husband who never listens or pays attention or gives any kind of care. And it's perfectly acceptable for a woman to go to her pastor and to depend on him or to have him give advice or consolation, or and oftentimes there is a kind of a subtle sexual identification. Well, what are you going to do then when the pastor up there in the chancel is a woman? I mean, it's a whole other scene. And a feeling then of somehow being deprived of this male hero figure, or the compassionate, loving male that is going to be with you in crisis and so on. Women are not socialized often. I can't say in my situation when I was in the parish that that was the case. I found my greatest support coming from the women of the congregation. I mean, I just had a remarkable group of women who were very affirming and who, on the other side of the coin, felt maybe more confident in relating with me as another woman and felt more on the same wavelength and less threatened than they had with the male pastor that had been there sometime prior to me. But still, that is operative. And I know personally a very good friend who was waiting for a call for about 2.5 years and finally figured out that part of what was jamming the process was that she was very petite, very young, very attractive, and there was a lot of feeling of threat, often on the part of the women, because of the reversal of that kind of situation. I don't want my husband over at the church working late with that young woman. You know? Or I really feel threatened that she is in a position where she is sharing confidentialities and she is working in an intimate decision-making capacity here. And, you know, in other words, we have a lot of growing to do in terms of recognizing the professional pastor, period. And I think acceptance within congregations, a lot of these factors have played in. Not only, I think not so much after the woman has the call and is in the position, as in the initial stages when the interview is the question. Which brings us to number two. I can't tell you, and I really don't think anybody can tell you, what the current situation is, because honestly, it does change literally from week to week. The call process, women that have been waiting for calls for a long time, suddenly there's a breakthrough and they're on the clergy roster. Some women that are right out of seminary, I had a call before I graduated. It's typically, I do think I'm safe in saying that the woman candidate probably has more struggle in getting placement. But let me add to that, that the call situation right now is tight for everybody. And there are also recent male graduates that are waiting for call. And part of that situation, as I say, is that we haven't opened as many mission congregations in recent years. There are numbers of pastors who are staying in their call. The mobility is not quite as it was. There are some inner city congregations, for example, that used to have 3 staff people. Now, because there's been a flight, they're down to 1 pastor, and it's an economic crisis. They maybe need more staff, but they simply can't afford to call. another pastor. And so there are a lot of factors that are feeding into that overall call situation. But even having said that, it is my feeling that women have, in most, now I'm talking about the LCA, because that's where I'm a pastor, in most LCA synods, there has to be a concerted effort to place women. It's still an issue. I don't think we've resolved it. The bias in ministry, I've already mentioned some of those. There is also the whole matter of people just simply being unfamiliar with that whole understanding of a female image in the pastoral role. It's just, some people aren't even biased, it's just something totally strange to them. And sometimes they won't even grant interview for call. And my contention about that is, it's a lot easier to say no to a printed resume than to risk invitation to the live, twinkly-eyed, bright, articulate, vivacious, well-trained, competent woman who is a candidate for this position, you see. Because then you open the door and you really find that all of your reasons kind of disappear, and all you're left with is, well, she's a woman. You see. They say, well, what was your sense about, did she seem to have a fairly solid sense of her ministry? What were her recommendations from seminary? Did she do well? Yes. What was your sense of her? She's very warm, very personable. I liked her. She's a very nice person. Uh-huh. Well, are you going to extend the call? Well, I tell you, you see, the thing is, she might get pregnant. Or something like that. At seminary difficulties, I think a lot of us who were the pioneers in this business probably confronted a lot more of that. I'm not saying it's gone. But I think on the language question, I think there are more women in seminaries. They are getting more bold. They are getting more solidarity in terms of their place in that community. They have been legitimatized by the church. They are there at the invitation of the church. They are, for the most part, excellent students. They do their homework. They're holding their own. They're taking their part. They're in the classrooms. And I think the more they are visible and active and there and in interrelational kinds of situations, both with faculty and male colleagues, I think some of that difficulty is beginning to kind of measure out. I don't think it's disappeared. Maybe some of you have been recently involved in seminary education. I've not been that recently in the seminary situation. Yeah.
I'm a pastor in the East Bay area of San Francisco, and we are one of the field education congregations for Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary in Berkeley. And for the last many, many years, we have had students every year do their field work with us, both men and women students. And I think one of the joys for our congregation has been just the exposure of the woman student to our congregation. But also within the seminary community, we also have to have one of the professors as a member of our congregation. And the impression I have is that most of the women students are the better students at seminary, by and large.
Sure, and you can understand why that would be.
Right.
They have to be extremely motivated. It still is not a profession. It's the same thing in med school and law school and engineering. A woman has to be highly motivated and well-disciplined. You're crashing the fraternity. You have to be pretty well committed. You have to have thought through a number of issues before you step over that line and say, you know, and then I think you, within your own sense, feel that you, to yourself, have to demonstrate a certain competency, a certain level of excellence. Now, I'm not saying that male students don't have that, but I think women even more so, because we are still in the minority.
I'd like to make an additional comment about the bias question. We also have a member of the parish whose father is a retired Lutheran pastor in Berlin, Germany. And she made an interesting observation a couple of years ago. She couldn't understand why there was so much hassle about the acceptance of women as pastors in America, when in Germany they've had women pastors for decades.
That's right.
I understand.
That's right. That's right.
Do you
Larry,
have any understanding of how the people in Germany have dealt with this, or?
Well, part of it is because the church isn't that significant over there anymore.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Larry, do you have any perspective being in a seminary city? I know it's not Lutheran, but still, do you have any insight or comment?
I have a comment.
Yeah.
Well, the Methodist Church has been ordaining women for some time. Mm-hmm. So it's not uncommon to have a large number of women appointed every year. Now, it's a different polity. If you're ordained in the Methodist Church and you meet the requirements for ordination, the church is obligated to appoint you somewhere, so you don't have quite the same dynamics working as when congregations decide who their pastor is going to be, rather than the bishop deciding who the congregation's pastor is going to be. What is the case, though, in the Methodist Church is that you have a lot of women at the entry level, and even though women have been ordained now for a couple of decades, there are very few who hold what are called major pulpits, are senior pastors in large Methodist church. Mm-hmm. You can think of some exceptions to that, but proportional to the number of women, the exceptions are few.
Although now the Methodist...
There is a Methodist bishop,
yeah.
Marjorie Matthews.
Marjorie Matthews is the first in
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the biases still operate.
Mm-hmm. This district, the Methodist district, just pointed at female superintendent, district superintendent.
Yes, there are many.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah. We have those in Wisconsin too. Mm-hmm. We have women that, you know, have been appointed to that level. Yeah.
My question connected with this is, you were talking about the LCAs in 1970. What about the other Protestant churches? How long ago did they start ordaining?
Well, you see, it's interesting to me. If you trace in the Protestant community, if you go way back, it seems that many of those who are out of more of a Johannine community kind of sense of discipleship, the kind of equalitarian witness model, a lot of your Pentecostal churches or your, churches that are not out of a sense of the apostolic succession tradition, that are not bound in a high liturgical, hierarchical episcopacy model. Those have been the churches that have been the toughest to move on this question. You know, like Lutherans and Catholics and the Episcopalians. You know, it's been a real struggle because of their adherence to certain kinds of canons and traditions and doctrinal stands, even to the matter of the image of Jesus being male, and that this is a legacy that is given, you know, from Peter to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, as opposed to those who grew up in a more evangelical communal model. And I think historically through the centuries, those strands have permeated, and I think in the 20th century now, you know, they still. There is no reason in my mind why the Catholic Church, I don't think they have a leg to stand on. But, of course, you know, they think they do. Male-female acceptance of women in ministry. I think we have to look at that in a I think it's very hard to stereotype that. I think there are some men who are in ministry who shouldn't be in ministry. It's absolutely the wrong call for them. They don't function well there. They have had a number of congregations and they have never really felt a kind of sense of fulfillment or rapport. There are other men who have gone in the ministry who have found it to be a very rich vocation for them. They have struggled, they have had problems, but they have been relational, and it has been clearly the field they should be in. And it's the same with women. There are some women that move in the ministry, have great gifts, are catalysts for the Spirit. Again, women have been socialized in such a way, you know, it's not threatening to drop in somebody's kitchen and have a cup of coffee kind of thing, you know, to make a pastoral call. Women do that quite naturally. They feel, again, you can't stereotype, but I mean, they have had more permission and more freedom to run the range of emotional expression. Now, I think women coming into the ministry have freed men up in that way. Have said, hey, that's okay, you know, to be with someone in the process of grief. And if when your parishioners die, and they were a good friend of yours, and you had a lot of good years with them, you know, you're not just their pastor, you've been their brother for 20 years. And of course you're grieving right along with the family. This is a loss. And that's okay to express that. And I think women, in a way, have freed the ministry up in that way, where they have said, you know, we don't have to just rationalize or be the theological expert or the professional Christian. You know, we can be full human beings in the midst of these people, and we are here primarily to enable them, to equip the saints, and to model for them what it is to be human. And I think women have added that dimension and have made a contribution that way in many situations. So I think it's hard here to qualify on the basis of genitalia, whether a congregation likes you or doesn't, you know? The matter of male-female ministry teams. Well, let's just face it, friends. Ministry teams are tough, period. I mean, that is a hard thing to pull off. Part of the characteristics that draw people into ministry, if we're going to be honest about it, is generally there is some leadership ability, there's some kind of strong ego need, there's some kind of need about being the pastor, you know, this kind of figure of the caregiver and the prophet and the proclaimer and the energizer and all that kind of stuff. Well, you get two personalities like that. Trying to share the spotlight, and you know, you might blow a fuse. Takes two pretty mature people. When it works, it is beautiful. But there are an awful lot of congregations that have been in the teen ministry situation that have found it's a real struggle to balance that out so that everybody gets their day in court, you know, and so that they are able to move outside of their role And, you know, all the old stuff about, well, who's going to get all the marriages, and who, how many Sundays do I get to preach? And, you know, you picked up 3 extra funerals last week. That must have been, you know, $50 a crack. I mean, you know, we're petty. We're little folks, us ministers. We're not so big. And same thing in a marriage. You know, it's worth it if you can struggle through it and learn how to grow and mature and deepen in relationship. But whether it's male and female, I don't know of a single 2 female team. Now that's going to be interesting when we really get to that point. We can call 2 women to come and do your ministry. So I just, it's very hard for me to generalize about this because you're working with a human personality. And I think it's very, very important to be quite clear in terms of definition of responsibility and to be accountable. You know, to fairly, sharply lay out, you know, this is what I'm responsible to do and this is what I'm willing to do. And to even do it, you know, like for example, some doctors that are in partnership, they'll rotate. So 1 month, one of them is on hospital call, you know, and the next month, you know, they work out a schedule so that over a period of a year, they are fairly distributing the load of the practice. Now, pastors could learn to function in that way and set up a schedule so that you knew I'm on call this month, you know, or I'm doing a 6-week series in the pulpit on this particular thing. Then I'm out of the pulpit for 6 weeks and you do it. You know, if you can negotiate that kind of thing and you're pretty clear about expectations, then I think there's more opportunity for it to work. Yeah.
Are there any teams that you know where the female is the head senior pastor?
No, but now part of that, you see, and in fairness, is that women have not been ordained that long.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
And usually when you, and that's not an excuse, but it is a factor.
That will also be a trailblazing experience for the first male, I would imagine, who becomes an associate or an assistant to a senior.
Female.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you see, I'm in campus ministry. And so that's a whole other thing. You know, I am the pastor at the university there. And so that, you know, I really have an awful lot of freedom to design my program and to utilize funds and set up things, you know, really. But then along with that, there comes also that pressure all the time to be the innovator, to be the organizer and the promoter, and that, you know, every semester you got a turnover. You know, you got new students, you got faculty leaving. It's like being at Holden, for heaven's sake. You know, I mean, it could drive you nuts. Been there 8 years and I'm showing symptoms. competition for call between male and female. Nine times out of 10, the male gets the first shot. And the woman very often, again, partly because most women are fresh out of seminary, will get, say, a rural call, a 2-point call. There is a difference, I think, often in salary scale. The rationale being, well, you know, a male has to provide for the family. You see. He has a wife and 2 kids, so he ought to be getting more money. I mean, forget it, that this single woman is putting in 80 hours a week and doing a cracker job as a professional in that call, you see. But we still think in those kinds of terms. that a male is a provider, you know, and so he ought to have more compensation, and so on and so on.
And who in the church who decides what the salary will be?
Well, I know in our synod, I'm in Wisconsin, I'm from Michigan, and we have a scale. And you see, that's the other factor. It goes according to years in ministry.
Then how does the male-female thing come into it?
Well, because a lot of times congregations can, you know, the baseline is within the congregational call process. It's pretty hard for the synod office. They can encourage, you know, and they can sit in the call process and try to help negotiate. But in the final analysis, that scale is mainly a recommended scale. And there are pastors, male and female, married and single, that are working at an incredibly low salary. And I think in the new church, that is something, both the call process and the question of the salary scale, that there should be some more equalitarian way. I personally don't feel that the guy who's out in Odessa, Minnesota, in this small rural parish, has any less challenge or any less integrity or any less energy exerted in his call than the guy that's down at Central Lutheran in Minneapolis that's got 10 people on his staff. You know, ministry is ministry. And when you start setting up this kind of ladder, career attitude, you know, well, I'm going to stay in this synod because it's about time for me to get a move and I want to go up. I want to get a bigger parsonage, a bigger church, more status, and more money. I think there's something wrong with that. And then what that means is that some smaller congregations are really hard put to get a pastor to come there because they can't pay him the same. And they don't have all of the same advantages. Yet if you go into ministry, you ought to examine what it is that has motivated you to go into ministry. And if you want to serve, and there is a need, and there is a ministry description, and your gifts fit that, whether male or female, I think the church ought to try to facilitate that and work it out in a more equitable way. Now that's me. But I'm going to make a shot on that commission for us to look at that. Yeah?
Yeah, are you familiar? Could you brief us on what the differences are between the LCA, AELC, and the ALC in terms of things like call process?
I really don't feel that well grounded at this point, you know, to feel that I could speak to that.
There are differences,
yeah.
Is there a re-examination of what it is to be called as pastor and minister to a parish now that we're beginning this process?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a task force assigned to look into that whole doctrine of the ministry and the whole question of placement and that whole thing is going to have to be worked through and looked at. And I think it really needs to be. I think it's very uneven and in many cases very, very unfair. And I don't know what the best process is, but I hope we come up with something. I feel at a critical need myself. Which brings us down to 8 here, the salaries and the congregational size. I really think that's I know some pastors that I have a very high regard for that I think are very gifted, that have really been out there in the vineyards toiling away for a long time and are not looking at ministry as a career or a way for advancement, but are really looking for an avenue of service and involvement in community. And so now we did the 8, Any you want to go back to or any you want to add? Yeah.
Anything unique or comments about clergy couples? Because some teams, maybe what would be a single parish, a single pastor parish where it's a husband and wife, some kind of split.
Right. Can I tell you a story? Is that permitted?
You want to take a vote?
Let's have a vote. Okay. I get to tell my story.
That's your favorite.
Jerome and I are a clergy couple. You know, he's been ordained many more years than I have been. But at any rate, we came up to Milwaukee, and I was at the university, and a congregation near the university opened up a position and wanted to call him. So we were already members of that congregation, and they had the congregational meeting, and I said to my daughter, well, come on, let's go down. We can vote for Dad. We're members. We'll put our votes in, you know. She was confirmed and all that. So we were down in the basement. The place was packed, and Jerome had been there, not under call, but as a kind of an adjunct staff person. And he was upstairs in the chancel with a bunch of high school kids, and they were rehearsing something, see? Well, all the congregation was down in the basement, and the vice pastor gets up, you know, and he says, well now, we are about to consider extending a call to the Reverend Jerome Nilsen. And this is the opportunity for any of you who might have any questions to raise those. I want you to feel very free. I want you to be very open. If there's anything at all that you think we need to look at before we take this vote. Well, somebody, to this day, I don't know who it was, somebody way in the other side of the basement pops up and says, yeah, I have a question. He said, yeah. Well, this is the first time we've considered calling a pastor who's married to a pastor. And I'm wondering, if the other Pastor Nilsen decides she wants to leave the university, then where is that going to put us here at Lake Park? Now, I would like you to comment on this husband-wife kind of situation. Well, it's absolutely still. And from right above my head on this loudspeaker comes Jerome's voice saying, and God said to Noah, take your wife and get onto the ark. And everybody just cracked up. Well, that poor vice pastor, he had a terrible time getting the whole thing back together. So he finally gets it all quieted down. They deal somehow this, you know. Well, then they're going to take the vote. So they take the vote. Somebody goes out and counts it. This really happened. And they bring it back in, and the vice chair, the vice pastor says, well, I have an announcement to make. Everybody, shh. Your new pastor is Reverend Jerome Nilsen. Everybody, yay! And some kid gets on and says, upstairs, not knowing what's going on, I do not think I am worthy of this reward. And I am sitting right under this big voice that's coming down out of the ceiling, you know. But, okay, so the guy that asked the question was right on, because I've been now, it's my eighth year, I'm coming up for renewal for another four-year term, and I'm really looking at that. You know, do I want to stay in campus ministry another 4 years? And if I don't, what do I want to do? What's my next option? And here's Jerome, you know, parish pastor, well-loved, great congregation, a lot of stuff happening there. One, the two of us have to examine where we are in terms of our ministry and what we want to do, because we're going to have to do it together somehow. Two, there is a situation of looking at a joint call or getting another kind of situation like we're in now in another community, and there are problems with that.
But you know, I don't think that's so very much different from any other male pastor who has a professional wife. For example, what if he were married to a professor after college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it is becoming, you're right, I mean, culturally, throughout the society, this is becoming a difficult question, you know. If you have two people, for example, at the university, we have some people who have their doctorates in the same field, and they are sharing an appointment, you know, and splitting their teaching responsibilities with their family responsibilities. I mean, there are ways that one can negotiate this, but I do know for a fact that this is another thing the church is going to have to take a hard look at, because more and more clergy couples are coming out of the seminary beginning their ministry. Our situation is not typical, but there are many beginning clergy couples that are faced with this dilemma. Yeah, Nayla.
I wonder if it doesn't happen routinely that with clergy couples sharing one call, that they don't really both work full time. I mean, it would be very difficult to,
yeah,
to not.
And I'll tell you another problem, you never leave it.
Yeah.
You know, you never just go home and turn it off, because the darn phone's going, you know, people are coming by, they this and this, you know. And the tendency then is to carry it home to the dinner table.
The congregation's looking for a bargain. That's what they want.
Often that's another situation, yes. And it's very difficult when you're sleeping with your colleague. You know? I mean, it is. It's a goofy thing there, because you're at certain levels of intimacy. It's like, it's kind of skitsy, you know? And it's, and again, it takes very mature, highly motivated, communicating people that are able, you know, to steadily keep struggling and translating what it is they're experiencing and where they are in terms of their professional life. Now, it can work the other way, too. There are an awful lot of times when a ministry situation will come up, and, you know, I'm at the university and Jerome's at the neighboring parish, and he'll refer somebody over to me, or I'll do vice versa, or oftentimes we'll do weddings together and do marriage counseling. Or there are circumstances that come up, and I'll fill in and do the liturgy and this sort of thing, and it's a lot of fun, and we get a lot of joy out of sharing ministry in that way. So there are a lot of pluses too, you know, and you don't have to explain, because you're both theologically educated, you're both working in the field, and there are a lot of things that you just can be supportive about and that you can tune into and know about, and that's an advantage often.
I think something has to be mentioned here, in that if these are two ministers married to each other, what about the male minister and his wife? And the wife is doing so much for the church and is getting absolutely no feedback financially overall. So the church is getting a bargain that way also.
Yeah. Well, that's the wife's decision.
That's right.
She's going to have to decide if that's out of her need or out of the need of the congregation.
It was expected, though.
Yeah.
Well,
it was almost pressured expected. I mean, you just did it, and so that was what your wife did.
That's changing a lot, too. That's changed an awful lot now. There are an awful lot of congregations now that no longer, you know.
Yes, I'm referring to my brother's sister-in-law, small congregation in a small farming community, and just they expected her to be the coffee server. I mean, they're just, I don't know, you're surprised when she wanted to get, she was getting a job, and, you know, outside of the church, she was not going to be able to do those things, and that was only a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's still around, but it's changing.
I think it's
one of the pastors we called, that was one of the things that he stressed, that his wife would not be Sunday school teacher and she would not be this and that, you know, that she was his wife.
Yeah, and I think there's more. I think that there's more of that going on generally in the culture within the congregation itself. There is more empathy with that kind of shift in women's roles, and I'm the pastor's wife, but nobody ever puts that kind of expectation on me, you know. I will go for months when I'm not at Lake Park because I'm out supplying or I'm busy on Sunday or something, you know. I fully expect one of these times they're going to ask me to sign the guest book.
How about a pastoral call for a delinquent member?
A pastoral call for a delinquent member?
Did you go get one of those?
Well, I always like to see him.
An interesting way to go would be to ask the question, should men be ordained?
Should anybody be ordained?
Yeah, that's the second question.
Rosemary Ruther has done a trip on that one, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to ask a congregation, what are the qualities that you're looking for in a pastor?
Right.
Just ask, what kind of qualities? Do you want one good counselor? Just precisely what are they?
Yes.
And then after you've listed those qualities, then say, now, you know, what person is likely to meet those? And then start looking.
Right. And I think that, you know, this is another thing. I think, first of all, when there is a vacancy, the congregation, and I think the synods are pushing them to do this more, they should first and foremost, before they interview anybody, really do a review of their ministry needs.
Yeah.
Where is this congregation? Where is the neighborhood we're serving? What are the real demands we need here in terms of pastoral position?
This is a requirement in our synod right now to do precisely that.
Yeah. And then once they've done a fairly good analysis of the ministry situation, then I agree, Larry. Then they ought to look at, well, now what kind of characteristics or gifts are going to be needed to fill this period of our history in this place? And then, irrespective of male or female, try to find a pastor that is able to struggle with them in that situation. Then we're really coming somewhere, folks. Then we're really beginning to understand the nature of ministry.
Yeah, in connection with that, I belong to a congregation who gives their pastor a term call.
Yeah.
And therefore, we have to do that the congregation does that every time before the call can be reissued to the pastor.
Yes, and that's good too. Campus ministry is on a 4-year term. And that's good because they send in a review team and they look at the ministry, and sometimes it's very supportive. You know, it's not all bad. They're not coming in to criticize you. They're coming in to evaluate and to say, hey, you are really doing great stuff here. I mean, we really want to recognize that and applaud where you're at. That's, you know, hey, ministers don't hear that enough either.
Right.
So, well, thanks a lot, friends.